Hello and welcome to Witchy Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Lauren Chalantani, women's holistic health coach and fellow recovering perfectionist. This podcast was created to show you that your body is not in the way. It is actually leading your way. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Witchy Wellness. And again, I am your host, Lauren Chalantani, and you're listening to episode number 61, 7 Days to Drink Less with Georgia Foster. Now, a lot of us that are listening to this might be still in quarantine or maybe post-quarantine mode, and we're realizing possibly that we either drank a lot more or a lot less during this time. And I know myself included tapped into that is, how do I really feel when I drink? But maybe you don't have a drinking problem. Maybe the problem is you're trying to drink less. And it's entirely possible to drink less by tapping into the power of your brain and change that habitual behavior in just 7 days flat. And our guest today, Georgia, talks all about this. And she says that, you know, therapists typically offer this all or nothing solution when someone identifies a problem with the amount that they drink. It's not drinking less. It's cutting it out completely. Well, our guest today, Georgia, is a clinical hypnotherapist and is a leading specialist in behavioral drinking. Her recent book and online programs offer an alternative to anyone who wants to learn to drink less without completely giving it up together. Georgia has already helped thousands of people take control of their drinking, increase their self-esteem, and improve their relationships with family, friends, and coworkers, all without the need to stop completely drinking. 95% of her workshop participants reported a moderate to significant reduction in their alcohol intake based on survey returns. In today's episode, you'll hear more about how to use hypnosis to drink less, what hypnosis really is, retraining your brain in just 7 days to drink less, tuning out your inner critic, how to become more trusting, believing in you, what is self-esteem, and why is that the root of every problem we have, and emotional availability. So without further ado, please enjoy today's guest, Georgia Foster, episode 61, 7 Days to Drink Less. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Witchy Wellness Radio, the show where you get to learn your body is not in your way, but actually leading your way. And today we get to talk with Georgia Foster, and we're learning how to drink less. And she taps into the power of psychology and hypnosis to help you retrain your brain and change habitual behavior in just 7 days. And I think a lot of us probably coming out of quarantine or lockdown are probably realizing we might need to learn this more than we did before, which is a beautiful mirror for us to jump in today and learn all about how to drink less. So welcome to the show, Georgia.
Thank you for having me.
I am so excited to jump in this topic. I have been exploring both the topics of hypnosis and drinking less in my own life. And I love how my own research kind of can come into the show and people can learn easily through people like you. And I know you probably have some story that got you into doing this passionate work that you do today. Powerful yet simple, because once we realize that we can actually reprogram ourselves and we can empower our own selves through things like hypnosis and understanding the psychology behind it, realize that drinking is just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm. Well, I always say that it's the thinking before the drinking that's the problem. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody wants to have a hangover. I don't think anybody likes to drink too much, as in, you know, wake up in the morning and feel really anxious and fearful and negative about life. And not feeling in control is not a good feeling either. So I think, you know, my irritation with a lot of traditional ideas about drinking less or having to quit drink is that person's got some sort of problem, or that they are addicted. Now, there may be some people, there are certain people who do need to quit, you know, and I'm very much supportive of those who decide. But there's a very big window of people who really want to get into middle ground drinking. You know, I was saying to somebody the other day, you know, every society has had its own form of alcohol. You know, the Fijians have kava, which is a hallucinogenic, you know, drink. You know, I mean, everybody's got something. So, you know, I'm saying, you know, it's not, the drinking is not the problem. It's what psychologically that person has trained themselves to do, what alcohol gives them emotionally. So, you know, I mean, I, in terms of you asking, you know, what's my, this is my big baby, this is my passion. Because in my 20s, I'm in my early 50s now, but in my 20s, I had very low self-esteem, high anxiety, and I used alcohol as my social confidence. And I think a lot of people are naturally shy. So when I qualified in hypnosis and did this psychology training in the US, I started to specialize in it because people were coming to see me for it. And I had a couple of corporate clients that they sent their clients, their staff about their drinking issues. And slowly but surely it kind of became a bit of a, you know, word of mouth thing. And then I wrote a book and obviously have an online program. But it was something that I felt personally I needed to deal with. And don't get me wrong, I have the odd hangover. You know, I do have the odd hangover. It's more the fact that I'm not conditioned to drink to run away from myself. And I deal with anxiety in a very different way. You know, if something's not going right in my life, alcohol isn't my first port of call. So these are the sorts of things I wanted to specialize in because I understand that, you know, it's lovely. I mean, I love my wine. I know that many people love their beer and they love their, you know, their cocktails. And so, you know, we need to get the fun bit into it, but without the negative connotations and the guilt that comes with it the next day when you've just drunk too much and you feel bad about yourself, because that's when the vicious cycle starts to happen. You know, we drink to calm ourselves down again. And that's part of getting people out of that cycle.
Yeah, I find when I was in college or university, I definitely fit that bill in my early 20s of not realizing what I was masking up. And then the next day you're hungover and you really don't want to address whatever you were, didn't want to feel the day before. And I've talked about this on the show before, but during my graduation, I had my first panic attack and I didn't realize I was dealing with anxiety my whole life and it came to fruition. And from that point on, I really didn't just naturally, thank God, didn't gravitate towards drinking more, but it definitely made me address those issues head on. And I think so many of us, you know, 20 something, even 30 somethings, realize we get out of school, we're put into adulthood or a career path or a family, and all these unresolved issues we had growing up, you think you would go away, or you think once you're magically an adult, you know, everything's perfect. And could you kind of talk to what you were seeing? Like, a lot of our listeners are 20, 30 somethings who are probably going through these same things and maybe not realizing they aren't facing as much as they could.
Well, I think what's interesting, when people are in their 20s, they think, well, it'll just get better as I get older. But the one big bit of advice is to anybody in their 20s and 30s is that, you know, there's a saying, your shadow follows you wherever you go. And I think that, you know, honouring that there may be, I mean, self-esteem is a big issue for so many. I mean, I actually think self-esteem is the backbone to all of people's anxieties. And if we actually had more confidence, you know, we would handle things better. And, you know, and I think that we tend to think that we're in our 20s, oh, well, I'll deal with the drinking later, or when I get more serious about my career, or I have children, or I'll become more responsible person. But statistics show that that doesn't, I mean, obviously you'll still be a responsible person, but it doesn't change your emotional relationship with alcohol or food or whatever it is. Because until you deal with that particular issue, it actually can snowball in anxiety. I mean, anxiety is a curse. I mean, panic attacks are just, I mean, I've had them myself. It's a very scary place to be. And a lot of people, I had an American client who used to come and see me in London, because I lived in London for 22 years where I had my clinic. And she was a real fantastic New Yorker, real Sex and City type girl. And when she used to come to London for business, she'd come and see me for an appointment. And she said to me, Georgia, she said, I think the only difference between Americans and British people are that in Britain, you have a pub on the corner, a pub everywhere, on the corner everywhere. And in America, we have a pharmacy. And I was like, you know, I mean, I think it's quite interesting that we all have, I mean, Americans are highly medicated people as well. So, and I'm not saying medication is not important, because it is, you know, for many people. But I think what we need to honor is, you know, we shouldn't be scared of ourselves. You know, I think, you know, we're allowed to be vulnerable, and we're allowed to not be perfect. You know, in fact, being perfect is what causes most of the problems and the anxiety. You know, so I'm very much about, and actually speaking of the psychology that I'm trained in, you know, is about being made up of many parts. And there's one particular personality trait called the inner critic. And the inner critic part is the part that says, why did you fail that exam? And that person did better than you. And why have you put on weight? And why are you drinking too much? And, you know, da-da-da-da, your life should be here and it's not here. And, you know, all this internal pressure that we have from this inner critic. Now, the bad news is you can't get rid of your inner critic. But what we do know is, and this is not my evidence, that the neuroscientists have confirmed, we need an inner critic. But in Western world, we have turned it against ourselves. And so when I learnt this particular Jungian psychology, I realized that my inner critic was driving my life. But what's interesting about alcohol is that when we drink alcohol, the inner critic goes away. The chemicals that are produced, like, for example, when you drink the first beer or the first wine or whatever it is that you produce dopamine. And the dopamine shuts down the critical part of the brain. And that's what we become more relaxed, and we feel maybe more sexy or witty or whatever it is. But the problem is that when the alcohol goes through the bloodstream and the liver has processed it, and you wake in the morning and the critic goes, well, you thought you got away from me last night, but I'm back with a vengeance and I'm going to give you hell all day. And then that person says, oh, you know, get me the wine, get me the beer, get me the gin and tonic, you know. And so that person will have that sense of vulnerability stirring all day and get really annoyed at themselves that why can I just not drink tonight? But it's because that part of the brain that manages our vulnerabilities is saying, there's something unsafe here. Can we have the alcohol? Can we, you know, we need to get that alcohol in to calm us down. So the brain gets hooked into having some space from that negative thinking. And I think a lot of people think that they're going to have better self-esteem as they get older. And that's true, but it doesn't take much, like somebody breaking off with you or being bullied in the office or having a critical parent, or, you know, it doesn't take much, because the inner critic loves critical people. So this is all part of what I work with the program, is saying, well, once you get your inner critic in check, your self-esteem will skyrocket and your anxiety will drop. And then you won't need to drink as much, you know?
I love what you said, mentioning neuroscience and how, you know, the alcohol actually releases the dopamine. And in my own meditation practice and trying to learn, how can we harness and reprogram our subconscious? And, you know, this research that I've read and the meditations that I practice, they've measured people. You can, if your body can process a hormone or a chemical, it can produce that itself. And how through meditation, you actually can produce more dopamine, more melatonin, more serotonin, whatever your body needs, and completely chemically upgrade and change your body. And for me, it's interesting. I'm kind of cutting myself off of coffee right now for this reason, because I sometimes feel like coffee is something that we think we need to be productive, we need to be focused, instead of how can I be focused and be productive in myself and not look for something outside of me? Because in reality, if I really take a look at when I drink coffee, I'm less focused and more scatterbrained. But in my brain, I think that, oh, if I just get that caffeine rush, I can get it all done. But for me, it's not true. And for something as normal as our culture as coffee and even alcohol, sometimes when we think like, oh, well, everybody else is drinking 3 cups of coffee a day, or it's okay to drink this much alcohol a day. How, you know, if somebody kind of comes to you and is addressing the psychology around to drink less, how do you kind of help them around social situations where either for work or family or even friends that they're in these groups where they're surrounded by alcohol and it's a peer pressure situation, really?
Yeah, I think it's very true. I was part of an article in a magazine once that was called Make Mine a Double and the Job is Yours. You know, and I think that we traditionally, you know, I think alcohol, not so much now in the workplace, but I call it the pleaser personality, which is another personality trait that loves to give us a hard time. And the pleaser is the part that says, I have to say yes to everybody. I have to be liked everybody. I have to kind of run myself ragged looking after everybody else. And what's interesting is that that also includes alcohol. So pleasers don't necessarily want to drink too much, but they tend to drink to belong or to connect or to support other people in their drinking behaviours. And I know a lot of pleaser, you know, when I had my clinic in London, a lot of people would say to me, Georgia, you know, my boss insists that we have our meetings in the bar at lunchtime or whatever. And, you know, there's always alcohol involved and I can't say no, but I really don't want to drink that much. And, you know, these things happen a lot. And it could be a partner. A lot of people say to me, you know, my boyfriend's a big drinker and, you know, and I feel like I have to drink to kind of please him because he likes someone to drink with. And these things happen a lot. But ultimately, you know, we have to look after our own emotional well-being. And if you don't want to drink that much, it's about starting to please yourself and starting to be assertive. You know, that's part of the program. Once again, it's about learning to honor you, because the more you please other people, the more you fester anxiety and actually start to become a little bit aggressive towards that other person because you feel like your voice isn't being heard. You know, pleasers are notoriously bad at being good communicators in the sober world. And I say to people, you know, if you're in a relationship with somebody, you know, and you have to have some difficult conversations and you have, a margarita in your hand while you have those conversations, then the partner can tend to blame the alcohol and say, oh, it's just the drink talking. But if you actually have a cup of coffee or a glass of water in your hand, then they know, well, hang on a minute, we're having this conversation, there's no alcohol here, I must look at this seriously. So alcohol can be a bad thing for a lot of people in their relationships because, I mean, a lot of people don't have sex until they've had a drink, you know. So, but once again, it's because the inner critic goes away. So people become more sexy or they think, you know, and a lot of people say to me, Georgia, the one thing I really get annoyed about, you know, I go to the school gates and I feel really anxious around the mums and I can't go and have that coffee because I'm too nervous. But I'm always up for that glass of wine after school, you know, at somebody's home when the kids are playing. So that always is a sign of that there's social anxiety, there's negative thinking. But the pleaser can be there as well and say, you know, how can you look after this person more? And so a lot of people get worried that they can't talk about difficult things without alcohol. So part of it is, once again, it's down to self-esteem, valuing your voice, valuing who you are before you drink, because when you do that, you won't have to have those uncomfortable conversations and the regrets the next day of, oh, my goodness, I told my boss I didn't like him after a few drinks and I really don't like him, but I could have done it with a cup of coffee, you know? So you know, these are the tricky situations that alcohol can get us into, and then we start to worry that we think we've got a drink problem, but actually we've got an anxiety issue.
Yes, there's always a root issue that we sometimes don't address. And I feel like anxiety is such a, I don't know, maybe because I'm in the wellness world, it's such a catchphrase. And like you said, kind of Americans are really heavily medicated. And I could name it, you know, at least 10 people, my family or friends that I know, have either been diagnosed with an anxiety disorder or are taking some type of medication for it. And I, you know, I don't want to knock anybody because I know how debilitating anxiety can be when, you know, you're on the verge of panic attack or passing out even because of, you know, your heart rate is raising and it's no joke. But what are some signs? I mean, we kind of touched a little bit on the social aspect of social anxiety and drinking. Do you kind of see some other signs through people who coming through you with anxiety that maybe people might not realize they have?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are lots of, you know, subtle anxious things that go on in people's lives. I mean, I've got a program that I created with my sister. She's a Kundalini yoga teacher. And a lot of breath work, you know, three-minute breath work things. And, they, you know, the problem with anxiety is you shallow breathe. So you can't have anxiety without shortness of breath. So people don't realize that if they're feeling negative or they're feeling fearful about life or anxious about anything, then they will be breathing very shallowly and then won't be getting the oxygen through the body. So, and they're very simple techniques you can use, but, you know, check your breathing because that means that you're tense, you're holding up, you know, you're kind of in a moment where you are feeling, you know, very fragile, but also very stagnant. And I think a lot of people do feel stagnant in their lives. I think a lot of people feel in a bit of a quagmire, you know, I feel like I'm not getting anywhere and da, da, da. But when you're in a negative state, you will be anxious. But it's been proven that when you're in an intuitive place, you make the right decisions. Life flows better. You know, you recognize that when there's a holding pattern, it will pass. You know, and that's really part of the work that I do is getting that person to be more intuitive. Because, you know, another thing that anxiety, you know, people who don't sleep a lot, you know, people who are insomniacs, you know, they may not recognize it as anxiety, but it is because the inner critic kicks in when the quiet of the, you know, the busy day's gone and then you hop into bed, you put your head to the pillow and then this busy brain syndrome kicks in. Then, you know, that's a form of anxiety as well. And the problem is when you don't sleep enough, then you get tired, you get negative, you know, people overeat, overdrink to try and calm themselves down and it becomes a bit of a vicious cycle. So, you know, anxiety can be just a bit of a bubble going on. It could be people, another form of anxiety is being angry at people. You don't understand why you feel this way, but it's because you're feeling that that the world is against you or, you know, many things that can happen in life can make us feel scared and vulnerable. But vulnerability is important. Because vulnerability takes us to a destination of understanding, why do I feel this way? You know, I mean, I'm not anti-therapy at all. But, you know, I call myself like a progressive therapist because I believe part of our problem, and the neuroscientists have confirmed, that our anxieties and our negative thinking stem from a time when we decided that we needed to think that thought. It's not based on truth. It's just what happened. But we tend to regurgitate. Our mind works on default on what did we do the last time we felt this way. And so when people say to me, Georgia, you know, as soon as, you know, my kids go to my ex-husband's for 5 days and I've got 5 days on my own, I'm just like, woo, party on. And I'm like, you know, drinking every night and partying too hard and everything. And you know, I'm saying, well, that's a habit. You associate being not having to be responsible with being a party girl from when you were in your 20s and you didn't have any responsibility. But now that you're in your 30s, you're thinking, well, why do I do this? What's wrong with me? Am I a bad mum? No, it's just become a habit because your brain will default to what you've been doing. So the hypnosis part is really about training the mind to create new mechanisms, coping strategies that reflect who you really are rather than who you thought you should be.
Yeah, I always like ask myself when I have my inner critic going, I always kind of try to make it fun, at least break myself out of it. And I ask, am I shoulding all over myself? Because I should have done this, I should have done that, da, 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 da. And when we can, whatever techniques that can get us away from the inner critic and kind of more of this bird's eye view, like you said, that more intuitive state, we can realize that, you know, everything's worked out this far. We can see a bigger perspective. We can see a possible next step that we wouldn't have seen, tunnel visioned, you know, right towards stress and the worst possible outcome. Your last example gave me another idea of, you know, I'm the age of a lot of my friends have families and now they have multiple kids and, you know, it's a lot of work. I don't have any kids myself. I've nannied before and I do know that it's a, you know, a full-time job and then some, but a lot of women feel like at the end of the day, they need a glass of wine to relax, or they deserve a glass of wine, which turns out being, you know, more than they want to be because of, you know, the stress or whatever. But I see it's a habit, like you just said, of associating like getting through the day with my children. I need to drink to be able to calm down or reward myself. Is that something that you see as well?
Very common.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the most common reasons why, you know, parents drink. It's because, you know, it's lovely to be a parent, but there's a lot of pressure on making sure they're okay and, you know, driving money and, you know, all the different things that we have to do. But ultimately, you know, I always say to people, when your children get old enough and they say, "Mommy, maybe shouldn't have that drink," then you think, oh my goodness. I mean, children want their parents to be perfect. Don't get me wrong. They want their parents to be, you know, the parent that everybody, you know, would love to have. But parents are vulnerable too. So, and I know a lot of, you know, mums will say to me, "George, I feel really guilty about how much I drink. And once the kids go to bed, I'm drinking a bottle and a half of wine a night," which is too much. But you know, I'm saying, well, you know, the thing is that through the day, all that tension that you're building up, and I call it very much the perfectionist personality drinker. It's the all or nothing. You know, the mum that says, you know, "I'm really good at not drinking all week, and I'm really good at my exercise, and I'm really healthy." And then Friday hits, and I think I haven't drunk all week, and then I just cane it, you know. And then I have a hangover a weekend and I feel like I'm not there for my children. That's very common too. So a lot of parents feel sometimes the combination of that perfectionist and the pleaser, where they're nurturing others, but it's like, you know, I've done it for everybody else. Now it's my time for me. So that can become a habit. And that's where a lot of the drinking doesn't go into the statistics, because it's home drinking. It's not measured. And a lot of people think, well, the doors are closed. I don't have to go anywhere. So it does tend to creep up. And I'm not saying don't drink, but what I'm saying is that when it starts to creep up is when you start to look at, you know, because our tolerance increases, and that one glass that used to be emotionally medicinal, then we need two, we need three. And then all of a sudden it's like, my goodness, where did that bottle go? Where was I? I've been chopping vegetables, I've been doing kids' homework, I've been doing all these things, and you think, where did that bottle of wine go? You know? That's what I call habitual unconscious drinking. So you don't realize you're doing it. And they're the sorts of things that I work with, because it's not just the emotional response I'm talking about here. A lot of this is just pure habit, you know, automatic pilot, right? It's 1 o'clock, I'm chopping the vegetables, I've, you know, whatever I'm doing, getting kids in the bath and everything. I mean, so many mums say to me, "Georgia, I wash my kids in the bath and I've always got a glass of wine in my hand," you know, and I think, why do I need to do that? But these are all common habits that a lot of people don't talk about.
Now, I know you talked about the program with your sister and other programs in a book. When someone comes to you, I don't know if you ever practice in person anymore, but we can talk about your main program now. How do you kind of touched on different ways that you work with people. what can they expect when working with you?
Sure. Well, I always, the fundamentals are the psychology, which is the inner critic and the pleaser and the perfectionist, because the perfectionist often ends up deciding not to drink, to quit completely, because they can't cope with the extremes of their drinking relationship. So, you know, for people who resonate with that, the 7-day program, the 7 days to drink less, is great. It's an online program, and it included in that there are hypnosis sessions that really, within 7 days, is about tuning out of the inner critic, becoming more trusting. In fact, the self-esteem program for those who aren't drinkers is really good, called Believing in You, which is, it's a beautiful program. It's about becoming more charismatic and more authentic. And, you know, because as I said, I think, you know, self-esteem is something we need to learn. We're not born with it, and we need to practice it. You know, just when life is civil, like, sometimes, you know, just like I'm feeling a little bit better, bang, something might happen. It's just becoming resilient. And that's where the anxiety reduction program, which is called Emotional Resilience, which is what I do with my sister. I mean, that's such a powerful program because, you know, I think a lot of people assume that anxiety goes away. But as you know, Lauren, it just can be there and can really be restrictive and often put you into positions that you know you don't need to be in, or hold you back from being in a place in the world that you really want to be in. So I think anxiety is a very important subject to be more aware of. And then I have my emotional overeating program called The Weightless Mind, which has the same principle about the inner critic. You know, you're so fat and no one's going to love you because you're da 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 da. You know, I call it radio crazy, going on and on and on, this inner critic voice. Whereas the goal of my programs, I say, the goal is to create classic FM, you know, where you're just chilled out, you're more in tune, you think, you know what, that person's just not being very nice, it's nothing to do with me, and becoming more impersonal. That's what the goal is. And it doesn't mean being impersonal means that you're being rude or abrasive. It's just saying, you know what, this stuff isn't my stuff, not getting involved so much in the dramas of other people's lives, I think is really important.
Yeah, a phrase we like to say in our household is, do I need to pick it up? You know, Whose is it? They don't have to pick it up. Yeah. And that's powerful, is realizing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Is this mine or someone else's? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's true. And I think a lot of people, especially pleasers, can attract bullies. And I always say to people, you know, the squeakiest wheel doesn't always get oiled, you know. And I think that we need to honor that some people's behavior is not appropriate for our self-esteem. And we need to become more discerning about, you know, people in our lives who bring things to the table, who support our well-being, and those that don't, we need to be a little bit distant from.
Mm-hmm. And realize. Know? And the inner critic, sometimes for me in my own life, it was attracting people that, you know, the abusers to my pleaser self, was that reflecting those inner critic thoughts I already had. It was realizing that I was already telling myself subconsciously or consciously those inner critical thoughts. And then, you know, I manifest people or a person to reflect that. And I think for me, it's, you know, a combination of all of what you talked about, the pleaser, the perfectionist, and the inner critic was the third one that you talked about. It just kind of, they're all one big, big wall for me.
Well, yeah. And one big party in your head that causes you so much stress, you know, and it's like, you know, we all have that intuitive part. And actually what you were saying before about, with the neuroscientists, they, you know, they've studied the brain, and when we're in a good space, we're here in the prefrontal cortex, mm-hmm. you know, and in the old days, the sages and the gurus and the meditators would call this the third eye, and people were saying, oh, that's just ridiculous, it's that hocus pocus kind of stuff. But now it's been proven that actually they were correct. When we're here, when we're actually in a good space, we are, you know, they've studied the brain. When people are calm, they're here. Mm-hmm. And this is the part of the brain that lights up. And when you're in a fear base, you're in the amygdala, which is just behind the back of the ears, a little almond-shaped part of the brain. So, you know, we need to honour that, you know, as you said, with our chemical balances, you can get that balance in there by your thinking. Look, it takes practice, but everything does, you know. But that's what's lovely about the hypnosis is you just put it on while you're going to sleep at night and the information's all going in, which is great.
And can you talk more about hypnosis? Because it's a word everybody's heard before, but I do know I've had a lot of questions about, we've had beginning of the season, a few different hypnotherapists come on, and people really don't know what it is, what to expect, and really how it works, which just surprises me. But would you please kind of give us a hypnosis 101 and how you use that in your practice?
Sure. Well, a lot of people think they can't be hypnotized. But, you know, once again, back to the neuroscientists, you know, it is just a brainwave activity that we naturally go into. Now, you can't go to sleep at night without going through the hypnotic state. It's called the alpha theta state. Now, a lot of people who meditate would say, well, you know, I know what I'm talking about here. But meditation is the same as hypnosis. The only difference is that with hypnosis, you know, with the recordings I have for people, you know, you can have a busy brain. You don't have to think about nothing. You don't have to be working with your breath. You just go with the words and just, you know, you tend to just drift off. I mean, they say about every 7 minutes we naturally go into a hypnotic state. But what's interesting about hypnosis is that when you're in this sleepy kind of half awake, half asleep experience, the emotional part of your brain is alert. It always is alert, but our conscious mind keeps us away from it. So when the conscious mind drifts in this hypnotic state, your clever part of your brain, where all of your emotional habits are stored, is open like a sponge. And so the messages that you give your brain at that particular time, it actually thinks that they're real. So I'll put it to you another way. If you had a fear of flying, for example, within 20 minutes in hypnosis, you can take somebody on the plane and induce the smell of the engine, fuel, passports, tickets, talk about being calm. You could talk about funny things. You could talk about lovely, beautiful moments to connect the right emotions such as calm, positivity, and clarity. So in hypnosis, in that little window of time, you can induce those feelings to connect with that situation. And when you do that, when you come out of hypnosis, your brain actually thinks that you've been there. Now, this has just been confirmed so many times now. I mean, they've done so many studies on hypnosis. I mean, it's just a fact of life now that if you want to make progress, it's not, a lot of people think, George, that's such a lazy thing to do. I don't have to go into therapy for year upon year. I'm like, no, you don't. You don't have to. The habit that you have about who you think you are is a habit. You can change it. And so, you know, what's lovely about hypnosis, it's just a beautiful way to go to the source, to cut to the chase, to go to the part of the brain that created the habit in the first place and create another habit that then becomes the response that you then go on to experience. Because, you know, your mind's like a library and it will continue to bring up the books that you've read in your head about stories in your life. And those stories will continue until you create new stories that reflect who you actually want to be. So hypnosis is a very liberating experience. It's a very honorable thing to do because you're actually taking control of your life in a positive way and saying, I'm done. I'm done with this anxiety. I'm done with this heavy drinking. I'm done with thinking I'm not good enough. I'm done. Rather than think, my father wasn't very nice to me or I was bullied at school. Those things happened, but it doesn't mean that it's going to reflect who you are. It's about creating life skills in the adult world that show you that you are, that was then, but this is now. And that's what I said I love about hypnosis because it's so quick and it's so rejuvenating and it's so positive. And that people say to me, you know, how do I know I'm in hypnosis? Well, you know, it's very hard to concentrate for that long anyway. But when your eyes are naturally closed, you're in a hypnotic state, which is lovely. So you can fall asleep, but when you do go to sleep, you're still in a hypnotic state. Your mind is still open to what you're saying. So even if the recordings are on repeat, your mind is still open to them too, which is brilliant.
Yeah, the more neuroscience way of this is, you know, practice makes perfect. And with our neural networks and our brain and the connections we make when we think a certain thought, think of a certain memory, or these programs that you talk about that we want to change, the more you think about that change or doing a different act, the more you're going to rewire that. It's practicing this visualization in a way, and an emotionally visualization of pruning those things you don't want. Let them fall apart and rather focus on what you do want. And I was just thinking, before I go to bed, I meditate, and I also have a mind movie, which is kind of, it's a hypnotic thing. It has a song behind it, and I have a picture and an affirmation related to the picture. And so I, you know, with different goals or things I want to manifest or change about myself. And it is getting myself into trance and allowing myself to kind of open up my awareness and allow that to come in and reprogram my brain, which I never thought about it, but it is hypnosis, I guess, in a way.
Yeah. That's a very good example of it. Yeah. It's an alert hypnosis. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're concentrated, it's the same thing. You know, and a lot of people say to me, Georgia, I've just read 2 chapters of the book, but I don't know where I was. You're actually in hypnosis then. Or when you're driving the car, you know, along the freeway, and you think, how did I get here? I don't remember getting in the car. You know, all the things are on autopilot, but you've actually been thinking something in here, you know, whether positive or negative. But I think the most interesting thing about hypnosis, which this is my favorite top tip, is just to take some music, you know, lovely relaxing music, and just spend 5 minutes in the morning just imagining the day ahead going really smoothly, feeling calm, feeling confident. You know, that is hypnosis. Even 5 minutes with your eyes closed and imagining this situation being resolved. You know, all of these things, I mean, I do hypnosis on a regular basis, because what we know, which is really good news, is that the inner critic can't see into your future. It's only working on your history. So when you use these future techniques, just to take some time, close your eyes, put some music on, or a mind movie, just hearing the words, seeing the words, feeling that I'm calm, and seeing yourself happy and dealing with difficult people in a positive way, whatever it is, and just gliding through your day, then your mind will think, oh, we're going to glide through my day. But if you wake in the morning thinking, what's going to happen today, you're already on the back foot. You know, you're already kind of preparing yourself for those inner critic, whatever moments. But it's been proven that the more you are prepared for positive things to happen, the more that they can happen, because your brain thinks that's normal rather than normal. So that's just a little thing I say to people, wake in the morning, go to the toilet, do whatever you need to do, come back and hop into bed and put some music on. It's a really good thing to do, and just to chill out to it.
Yeah, and I love what you said about, you know, not in a different word, but not being a victim of your past, of, you know, what happened and processing what you need to process. But I see the biggest change in people when they decide, like you said, to focus on that future, practice that future. Who do you want to be? And not only want to be, but who are you right now, who you truly, really are? I think that's the key, is, you know, so many beautiful people like yourself are saying the same thing in different ways, is learning how to connect that intuitive part of yourself to really feel into who you really are, how we're meant to feel. Because I think a lot of people, like, I can't feel too sad or too anxious, but I also can't feel too happy because what if X, Y, Z?
And I think that's the point, is, you know, it's not that we're not going to have difficult times, but we see those difficult times as an opportunity that will, you know, to grow and to prosper, but also to take ownership that we are who we are, and we are vulnerable people. And being vulnerable is a good thing, because it means that we are open, we're emotionally supportive to other people, we have more empathy, We can communicate better when you've experienced something. You kind of can get it more, like, you know, you saying you've had a panic attack. I've had panic attacks, you know, when I was trying to get pregnant. And the thing is, you know, all these things that go on are there to help us grow and not to squash them down. And, you know, but I think there is a very big misconception that we have to think negatively to be prepared for it. When we think intuitively, we take those difficult moments better, you know. So absolutely, I think. And once again, going back to the beginning of the conversation, it's down to self-esteem, you know. It's down to self-worth. It's down to, you know, people. I mean, I got an email from a woman the other day. He was just saying to me, you know, I didn't realize when I started the drinking, the 7 days to drink less program, that it was all to do with the fact I didn't like myself, you know. But that's a very common thing because that inner critic is so strong. But once you tune out of it, there's this beautiful person there. He's like, I've been wanting to come out for such a long time, you know, and this is what it's about, you know, honoring who we are and realizing that we're doing a great job, but, you know, we could be looking after ourselves a bit better.
Very true. And with that, I would love to wrap up the show. That's a beautiful end note. Did you have anything else you wanted to cover or talk about before we close the show today?
No, just if anybody wants to make contact with me or have a look at my products, the website is georgiafoster.com. Georgia is in the state of America, foster.com. And, you know, this is my baby. I love talking about feeling empowered and helping people to see that their mind is incredible. So, but, you know, the one thing is that, you know, there's a really famous saying by Yogi Bhajan who says that, you know, it's not the life you have, it's the courage that you bring to it. And I think that that little bit of courage goes a seriously long way.
Indeed. And I think it's just that little bit of courage and inspiration from people like you. And my hope is the show does the same, is that there is a choice. You can be a brighter version of yourself. You can be healthier. You can be happier. You just have to make that decision and know that it is possible. And with that being said, if you resonate with the show, share this with your friends and your family. And also, you know, head over, follow through, because I don't know how many podcasts I've listened to and thought, ooh, that was a good topic or good idea. But what really matters is following through. And I want to say doing the work, but the way that you do it, it just seamlessly reprogramming as you fall asleep. I can't think of a better way.
Absolutely. It's good. It's a good way to do it.
Thank you again, Georgia, for coming on. I learned a lot, and I'm so glad to have you on to share all your wisdom and your tips and empowerment, really. And I know all the listeners learned a lot in this show as well. At every show, I like to challenge you, the guest, how may we, all the listeners, repay you as a gift of gratitude for your time today?
Absolutely. And I think that's very important. Gratitude is just so, you know, gratitude is something that, you know, I would say, you know, if you can think in your day, amongst all the stressful things going on, you know, what can you offer yourself as gratitude to this world right now? You know, just to make a list of things, post-it note, set an alarm just to remind yourself is so important.
I agree. Because once we're grateful, that's when you actually feel grateful. That's when you're connected to your intuition and your heart. And you can't fake it. It's either like you're in love or you're not, or you're pregnant or you're not. You know, you're grateful or you're not.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Well, thank you again so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me. Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
And remember, open up, surrender, trust, and let your body lead the way.